Welcome back, everyone. So this evening, I want to explore a theme which is very important for me, I think very important for the whole Sangha, which I've explored at different times. And this is the theme of deepening daily life practice. I think I want to do it in some ways different from what I've done in the past. And I offered the guided meditation in part to explore some of the ways that I'll mention and develop this evening. So the guided meditation will complement the talk. And this is an area, again, that for me is very central and really I'm passionate about in many ways. And I was thinking it's always been important for me as a practice. I'm aware that in the insight meditation tradition, often, very often, this is my experience, there's been an emphasis on both retreat practice and formal meditation. And often the emphasis on daily life practice has been more secondary. You know, it's also important to recognize that the Marin Sangha was founded in significant part to really to support daily life practice. This is from the website of Marin Sangha. Marin Sangha is a mindfulness meditation Vipassana group in Marin County that puts special emphasis on living the Dharma in daily life. That's an intention of the Sangha. But again, it's not easy. And I would maintain that it's been still rather underdeveloped in the insight meditation world, where the emphasis remains on formal practice. And for me, this is a significant issue. Early on, I could see that. I was very interested at the time in connecting retreat practice, which I love and have done a lot of, with daily life, and including with social change and social service, social justice work. That's been an interest since the beginning. And I found myself really, after I did my first few years, where I did a lot of retreats, I was living in Massachusetts near the Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Massachusetts, and doing a lot of retreats there, and also lived there at one point for 6 months. I actually had a special arrangement where I was working on my studies. I was a student at the time, and I was doing about 8 or 9 hours of formal practice a day, and doing about 6 hours of study. And about once a month, I'd go see my friends in Boston and be rather socially inept from all the meditation and study, but that's another story. After that period, I was very interested in the daily life practice. And at that point, I had almost finished my graduate degree, and I got a position. I got jobs teaching at colleges and universities. And I spent 7 years in Ohio, in rural Ohio, and then in Lexington, Kentucky, teaching for the University of Kentucky. I'm teaching a very large percentage of the football team, by the way. That was another story, another set of stories there. Really wanting to emphasize daily life. And you know, I missed some of the formal practice, and I eventually chose to move to California after those 7 years. Again, another story. I went to a retreat soon after I had moved to California, and I started to get very angry at the teachers because they were treating us, I thought, like we were monks or nuns. And there doesn't seem to be a recognition of the importance of daily life. And I got really, really angry at the teachers, including Jack Kornfield. And, you know, anyway, that was, I've sometimes talked about that. That was my retreat where I was angry for about 16 hours a day for 10 days and worked with it, with Jack's very excellent instruction to work with the anger that I had in part with him. Anyway, interesting stories, but it was really wanting to focus on daily life. And so that's been an emphasis, but at the same time that I've explored deepening and retreat, about 10 years ago, I had the sense that my deepening and retreat had reached a certain level of stability and that really my cutting edge was daily life. How to have that quality that can be there at a certain degree of stabilizing and retreat. How can that be there more in daily life? So that's been an emphasis. And how to do that? How to practice in that way? The Buddha said that the Dharma practice goes against the stream of daily life, and it's hard, right? And it's hard to do that. The emphasis on daily life practice, as I mentioned last time I was here, focusing on sort of the taking daily life as a kind of sacrament in a way. I used the word sacramental and sacred, you know, the last two talks. We find that in the monastic tradition. You know, I mentioned how you can find that in the Thai forest tradition. You know, this is again from Achan Cha. Proper effort is not the effort to make something particular happen. It's the effort to be aware and awake in each moment, the effort to overcome laziness and defilement, to make each activity of our day meditation. So that's there in the monastic tradition. And yet, how do we do that in our lives? Because we recognize that daily life in this culture can often be distracted. It's a very mental culture, all sorts of distractions, right? Even if we're longtime practitioners. You know, the Thai teacher Buddhadasa once asked of his opinion of Western culture, said, "Lost in thought," right? And how many of us, even with years and years of practice, sometimes find us for hours lost in thought, right? It's the way it is. We have to work with that. And so what I want to do here is to mention and explore 8 primary ways of deepening daily life practice, of having that continuity there. And what I want to invite us each to do is to see of these 8, which one or two most appeal to you, and which you might even be willing to give more focus on in the next week than we would come back a week from now and compare notes. So the invitation is not to do all 8 of these, but to see which one or two of them resonate with you. The first of these, and I thought to mention it right at the beginning, is to find community support. This is something we explored in a practical way a few sessions ago, and which I think is still being worked out at the level of the Sangha. But how do we have support from within the community? You know, for some of us, it might be with a partner. For some of us, it might be with a friend or a so-called buddy. You know, it could be a group of 2 or 3 people. And that can make a huge difference. I have a close friend with whom I talk about practice. We're more or less peers. And I talk with him once a week for about half an hour. And a tremendous support. Partly, there can be a kind of accountability. There can be support. I find myself, and some of you have that kind of arrangement, I find myself sometimes saying, oh, I'm going to talk with my friend tomorrow or in 2 days. I think I'll do this practice sessions now rather than something else, right? That happens. How many of you have a friend or buddy like that and it works like that? There's accountability. There can be more motivation. And can be very, very helpful. You know, I was this morning with a group of people who I've been working with now twice, who came from the day long that I led at Spirit Rock on transforming the judgmental mind. We have a group of 18 people who are continuing roughly every 2 weeks or so for 6 sessions. And it's already quickly become very precious. People are very intimate. They share. We work with, it's a 2-hour session, and I work with groups of small groups of 3 breakout groups. And I can see, and I'm encouraging them to communicate with each other, communicate with the whole group. These are, how do we find support? So I'm going to mention that as my first support for deepening daily life practice. The second is to, again, I'm not saying do all of these, I'm saying which of these resonate. The second is to increase the number of sessions, of formal practice sessions that you have every day. It could be to say, if you'd have one session, I'll add a 15-minute session in the evening. And I want to encourage a very broad sense of what practice means, and see, it doesn't have to mean formal meditation practice. It could be, or formal sitting meditation. It could be walking. Take a 15-minute walk and have it as walking practice. That may be something which really works for you, where sitting another 15 minutes wouldn't work, or wouldn't work easily. You'd be forcing yourself a little bit too much. Or it could even be listen to a talk for, during the day, but to find some ways of bringing further sessions in. A beautiful practice I think some of you may do is to pause for 3 or 4 minutes, 2 or 3 times during the day. This will make a difference in your practice. You might pause when your mind gets a little bit reactive or upset. Set your intention to pause and do it even when nothing necessarily is happening. This can make a difference. A lot of people find it really useful to have a session. If you have one in the morning, have another session before going to sleep. It can be brief, One friend listens to a recording. There's a wonderful nun from Australia who has a collection of recordings based on sacred writings from multiple traditions, multiple Buddhist traditions. Anyone know who I'm talking about? Maybe I'll send it to Bill to put in along with the talk for today. It's a wonderful resource. I have several friends who listen to this nun, amazing nun, doing readings from sacred text, and they listen for 10 minutes at the end of the day. And it can make a big difference. Another practice is a Sabbath practice. Have 3 hours one day a week, or a half a day, or a whole day, where you do a little more practice, and if one can do that consistently, that can make a difference. If it's the same day, it'll have the function that Sabbaths have across multiple traditions, that it becomes a pivot of the week. The third way to deepen practice that I want to mention is to focus on particular daily life activities as places to bring awareness to. It might be to bring mindfulness. It might be to bring loving kindness. You know, I have several people I work with who have young children, and they do metta when they're with their kids. These are young kids, like 6 months to 2.5 years, right? And they regularly do metta at those times. I have several other people who work in hospital settings and also do metta, loving kindness, in those settings. So we're looking for, are there activities during the day? It could be being with certain people, could be washing the dishes. It could be, I don't know, doing a physical exercise. You know, for a period of time, for several years, I would do a knee exercise that had me sitting up on my bed, which took about 10 or 12 minutes, and I would have it be a practice period. I would do that every morning. It would be after my formal meditation. So see what you can do. And the emphasis here is to find activities which are easy for you. You know, we want, you know, one way that we can deepen practice is to have a sense of which of my daily life activities are fairly easy to bring some kind of practice to, mindfulness or loving kindness, and which are harder. Start with the easy ones and bring awareness there. Could be having a meal. If you're having a meal, you know, with a partner, by yourself, you could agree to have the meal, much like at a retreat, doing awareness practice, right? So this is, again, an option to do this in a simple way. And all we're talking about is finding one or two activities that bring, you know, when you do those activities, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, have them be something that throughout the week you bring awareness to. The fourth practice or fourth way to deepen is through mindfulness of the body. Again, it could be a practice that we do as we did in our guided meditation. We do it in formal practice. And I find that mindfulness of the body is very, very central for bringing awareness into daily life because it's such a mental culture. I think I've occasionally mentioned a conversation I had with John Travis quite a number of years ago. John was a wonderful mentor for me at a key period. He mentored me as I was coming into doing retreat teaching more. And he worked closely with me and gave me a lot of practices over probably 7 years. And one of the discussions we had started with me complaining about daily life practice being hard. And I said, you know, look at these people who are in monasteries. Look at all the support they have, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's hard. It's hard in daily with daily life in the West. And I was kind of complaining. And John said, let your body be your monastery. Meaning the body is always there. Awareness of the body can be the reminder which keeps bringing us back. And when he said that, at the time, it was electrifying for me. I said, whoa, or, you know, I don't know if I said that, but something like that went on, right? That is deep. And actually, John gave me a practice, which I gave to you in the guided practice, of being aware of the whole body, that practice where, you know, it's not being aware of the really the precise moment to moment, here, this is happening, here, that's happening, but rather a kind of general vague awareness of the body, you know, and starting it by almost like being aware of the outline of the body and then filling it in, much like a child fills in coloring after doing first the outline. And I did that practice at least for 2 or 3 years, virtually all the time when I was doing formal practice. And it has made such a difference in daily life. And so again, that can resonate, and it can be helpful to do that practice first as a formal practice. And so do it, you know, do it 10 minutes a day and then bring it into daily life. The fifth practice I want to suggest, again, see what resonates for you. See the one or two which resonate for you. The fifth is working with a teaching. Working with a teaching both in formal meditation and in daily life. So we, in a way, looked at that. In the last two sessions I was here, we looked at the teaching of taking daily life, however we express it, as sacred or as a sacrament or as mysterious, whatever language works for you. We looked at that. You know, you could work with that teaching. Or, you know, some of the other teachings I mentioned simply working with mindfulness of the body, and taking that as a practice. Or one that, you know, I've emphasized a lot here that I mentioned some in the guided meditation, working with the teachings about reactivity, the teachings in dependent origination, the teachings that involve the feeling tone or Vedana, and how when we're not aware, something pleasant, especially if it's fairly pleasant or pleasant a lot, will lead to wanting and grasping, and the unpleasant, when we're not aware, will lead to not wanting and pushing away. And that, those can take place in 100 different ways. You know, we're talking about something which is, could be unpleasant physically, unpleasant mentally or emotionally, something that happened yesterday, you know, an idea, all sorts of levels that this can happen. And so we can really look out for the reactivity. Look out for it and study it, explore it, see what's there. One of the ways we can work with reactivity that we, I think, have explored at times is the teaching of the 8 worldly winds, which is a, sort of an identification of 8 different forms of reactivity. Remember those? Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, and praise and blame. Set your intention to look for those when they appear in meditation during the day, right? Study them when they come up. That's a beautiful daily life practice, to really set the intention maybe once or twice or 3 times during the day. Let me look out for reactivity. And then you, when it comes, you could pause, you know. And there are different ways to work with that. We could work with the teaching of the 4 Noble Truths, which it has some similarities to what I just mentioned. Look for a moment of dukkha, or what we sometimes call suffering. Look for whether there's grasping or pushing away. See what helps you to come to the end of the grasping or pushing away. You know, we could work with the 7 factors of awakening. You know, a lot of different teachings we can work with, because the teachings are all designed to be put into practice. And, you know, we could work with 1 teaching a month, you know, and that could be a beautiful, beautiful way to practice. And so, again, it can guide one both in formal meditation and in daily life. A 6th form of practice would be working with a heart practice regularly. And I mentioned how some of the people I work with bring heart practices into being with children, being with people in the helping professions, like in hospital work, sometimes in people who are psychologists or therapists. And I thought I'd read briefly. This is from one of my students with a young child. This is about bringing metta into being with the child. After a long, hard day, I finish the chores and finally slip into the soft, chill bed sheets. resting my head on a fluffy pillow. Sleep comes quickly for this tired body, as deep sleep. An hour later, I'm awakened by a loud noise. Eyes open reluctantly, along with a deep sigh, as I rise to investigate. Moments later, the noise stops, and I'm back in bed asleep. Another hour, the same noise, the same response. Yet, I find some frustration instead of the sigh. Another hour later, another wake up. I investigate and return to bed. This time, I don't fall back to sleep. The frustration of being repeatedly woken up for several days in a row now has become too great. I lie in bed wired and tired with unrelenting thoughts. Why does the noise keep happening? Why can't I just sleep through the night? I'm exhausted and need rest. The sound is getting very annoying. After a few nights of this, I'm stuck with a realization. My task is to see my nights as practice. Because you see, the source of the noise is my innocent baby boy, Aiden, crying. Aiden is 6 months old. Maybe some of you know this well, and going through a sleep regression that many babies his age experience. Now, when I slip into bed, I set an intention for the night. I know Aiden will cry soon and wake me up. I vow to be as present as possible with Aiden so I can understand his unmet needs. I vow to hold him and myself in compassion and love. I vow not to express my frustration towards Aiden because he wants sleep too, is innocent and unconditioned and so beautiful, and because I love him more than I can explain. During each wake up, I connect with my intention. So one of the ways that we can bring metta, and you can do that in various ways. A seventh way is to, and I should say that we could do heart practices and bring them into daily life with metta, with compassion, with forgiveness, with gratitude. I've often mentioned how I swim 5 or 6 times a week, and my entire time of swimming is doing metta. It's about 40 minutes of metta during swimming. Very nice. One being per lap, and I repeat 16 beings. So, but it's easy. It's easy to know when to switch. Seventh practice is to find some way during the day to touch our deeper nature. You know, it might be through metta or love to feel that with some depth. It may be to have stillness of mind that we touch, to find a way to touch what's deeper in us. Those of us who've worked with touching awakened awareness or non-dual awareness, finding a way to touch that, at least for a short time every day. Touch what's deeper. This can be very motivating and grounding. It reminds us of the horizon of our practice. And then the last one is something that I'll describe in more detail through a quotation, but this is what we did right at the end. This is the eighth practice, which I learned especially in Tibetan tradition, of mingling or mixing formal practice with daily life. And the way this would be done would be at the end of our formal practice, when we have the time done, not just say, okay, done with formal practice, and then just sort of go into habitual mode, but is to explicitly set the intention. Maybe some of us already do this, to have continuity with the period that comes next. In the Tibetan monasteries, this is done as a formal practice. I've done this, not in the monasteries, but working with Tibetan teachers, where you develop a really stable awareness, and then you bring it into various activities. Well, maybe I'll talk more about that next week. But I'll end with this quotation. This is from a book called Crystal Clear by Kenshin Trungpa Rinpoche. He's describing this. At the beginning, there is a distinct difference between the state of meditation and post-meditation. But now we need to merge these two states into one so that our practice becomes continuous. The mingling is considered to be of utmost importance. When your practice becomes grounded, you must also learn to sustain it no matter where you are or what happens. There is a saying in Tibet, when the sun shines and the belly is full, I look like a Dharma practitioner. But when faced with troubles, my faults are exposed. To ensure that this does not happen, we need instructions on mingling. Namely, sometimes stay in a quiet place, sometimes surround yourself with sense pleasures, sometimes go to places that provoke strong emotions, such as anger, desire, jealousy, and so forth, and sometimes go where you feel very insecure or threatened. In all these situations, check whether or not you are capable of sustaining the practice. So I think I'll say more about that next time, but that would be simply to, you know, just in a very simple way, at the end of the formal practice, set an intention to bring this into what comes next. That'd be a very simple way to start. So let's just sit quietly for a moment and see which of these resonate for you. Are there one or two of these which appeal more to you, which you'd like to bring into practice in the next week? Maybe I'll mention the eight again. Let's see. The first is to be supported by community, have a buddy or a friend. The second is increase the number of sessions in some way. The third is focus on particular activities. The fourth is ground in the body. The fifth is work with a teaching. The sixth is connect heart practices or one heart practice with daily life. The seventh, touch your deeper nature. And the eighth, mingle or mix. Were there one or two of those which appeal to you, which you'd like to bring into practice? Just sit with this for a moment. Also see if any sharing or questions come up. We have some time now for talking together. You can either raise your physical hand, or I see Vita. I see Patty first. We'll go Patty and then Vita.
Thank you, Don. This is wonderful. I have two comments. One is that I already do number 5 and 7 in that I have an app on my phone called We Croak.
That's right.
Five times a day, I pause to read it and remember that all things are impermanent. So my impermanence practice is quite active. And I bring that to mind whenever I am upset about something or thrilled about something. I remember it won't last. And that practice really helps me a lot. And that app helps me a lot. And it helps me touch a deeper part of myself because it's sometimes very painful. Or I shouldn't say painful, tender, to remember that none of this is permanent. And I see a lot of overlap between 5, 6, 7, and 8. It's hard to separate out the heart practice from the teaching on impermanence, from touching a deeper nature to mingling formal practice with daily life. They all overlap for me.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's my comment.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great to connect those. That's beautiful, Patty, to show how, you know, I can name these a difference, but as they mature, they connect with each other, right? And thanks for bringing in a further teaching, you know, teachings on impermanence, on contemplating death, which is typically part of the traditional teachings on impermanence. And that can be a powerful teaching, which one does during the day, all sorts of different ways of working with that. It's, know, that's we're gonna work with that at that August Spirit Rock retreat. We'll focus quite a bit on impermanence for about half a day. So thanks, Patty. It sounds very rich. Vita, please.
Well, thanks so much, Donald. First, I want to comment that having that support, that buddy, I have a couple of them. One that's been going on, I think, for 25 years. Wow. And the other for many, many years. And they really are grounding for me. They really, if I'm falling off, boy, they bring me back. So it's really helpful. Also, thank you for reminding me. I've tried to have metta for my clients. And sometimes, well, this is a good reminder. Sometimes they're difficult. My question, I do have a question, is I did a little bit of this mindfulness of the body, the having the shape and fill it in.
Yeah.
It was really short, but it touched something. So I don't know exactly how to do that in daily life. Are there certain times of day when so if you could explain a little bit more what the actual process would be, the when or the how, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much for this great talk.
Yeah, thanks, Vita. Yeah, wonderful to hear about how much of support your buddies are over the years. Really crucial. And in terms of the whole body practice, I can look at my own experience, and also I've worked with people in terms of, I've worked with a group once where we worked with this for about 8 months. And my experience is with the whole body practice, it's not an easy practice, and not an easy practice to do immediately in daily life. And so when I've worked with people, we start doing it particularly as a formal practice until it gets to some level of stability. And so this is in terms of the whole body practice. And so, and again, it's going to be individual. So I think, for me, I did a lot of it in formal meditation. At a certain point, which was, many months in, it became, I became able to, I can even like right now, to go very easily to the whole body. And it's just there in a moment, in a stable way. But that's the fruit of a lot of formal practice. So I think I would recommend that particular practice, first do it more formally. You can experiment with it in situations where you don't have to do thinking or talking much, maybe in doing walking meditation. That could be a good place to develop it, or something where you're doing a physical activity without needing to think much. Ultimately, you can have it be there even in talking and thinking. But I would recommend that you develop it first, formal meditation, and second, in physical activities where you're not needing to think hardly at all or talk. That'd be my recommendation. And then the other piece is you could also, there could be some other body practices which help you to stay present. It could be with the hands or feet. But in terms of the whole body, that's what I'd recommend. Yeah, thank you. And the other could be a question, could be something to share that is connected with what I've been mentioning. Is it Kylie, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, thanks, Donald. That's perfect. Thank you. This is a fabulous teaching because where I live, there's not a lot of access to in-person teachings and sangha. And so you guys are pretty much it for me. And it's just so wonderful to have that. But in terms of, I love that quote about letting your body be your monastery, because to me that really encapsulates you, that ability to have my body as refuge.
Yeah.
And I was like that proverb, you know, the human being or the man who lived a short distance from his body, you know, until I did a course on sensing the subtle body, you know, the Satipatthana Sutta. When I was introduced to that, I thought, oh my God, they're not set mind, body, heart, not separate.
Yeah.
And being able to feel into my body and have it as a refuge has just been wonderful. But this dichotomy between life on and off the mat is ongoing for me and a deep challenge. And just yesterday I was talking to my husband about bringing mindfulness to eating.
Yeah.
You know, we're very busy and he's quite a perfunctory eater, and I tend to just try and keep up with him. So we had a really good chat about that. We're going to try and do that. And I too have apps and alarms that go off during the day for short practices, but it's amazing how I can talk myself out of doing them in the moment. So, continuity is a challenge, and that's where Sangha is really powerful for me. And heart practices I had some deep family of origin issues the last few weeks, and the only practice I could do was just to bring my hand to my heart and say, oh, darling, this is hard.
Yeah.
It was amazing how much more resilient and how much quicker I was able to transition from that point of dukkha into being able to function and being able to reopen and not stay contracted and hurt. But yeah. Wonderful teaching. Thank you so much, Donald.
Yeah, thanks, Kylie. There's quite a lot, very much, in what you shared. And, you know, that last practice is really a compassion practice, very similar to the one I've sometimes given, Kristen Neff's three-step practice of acknowledging it's hard, number one, recognizing this is something common to humanity, common to others, and then giving oneself some kind words. It sounds very similar to what you did, and really very simple. It takes 2 or 3 minutes, can do that. And then I love, you know, hearing about the grounding in the body and the importance. And then with something like meals, just to find something like, you know, see what works for you or works for the group. Could be one meal a day or part of a meal a day or, you know, 2 or 3 meals a week, something like that. But the key is to do it regularly and have kind of a pattern. And so that's great. It's great just to hear how things are developing. Thanks, Kylie. Maybe time for one more if there is one. Yeah, and then with Deborah, and then we'll go to our closing. Looks like you're still muted, Deborah.
Sorry. I think I'm doing a mind and body awareness practice that has gotten more frequent every day. I think because my body's in pain all day long, I do my best to multiple times a day, whether I'm in the shower or washing the dishes, as you said, or just sitting at my laptop, paying attention to what my breath is doing and what my body is doing. Is it in alignment? Is my weight equal on my feet? And just being aware, and then having gratitude that, as I shared with Sangha a week or two ago, thanking my body for just carrying me this far.
Yeah.
And then applying the same practice to what my mind is doing, where it's going, what tape loop it's playing, what rant is it on, and then letting that go, making the choice to let that go, and coming back again to the body and the breath, and either some gratitude, which I throw in with loving kindness practice, and then appreciating something. Appreciating something, even the person I might have been yelling at in my head, just wishing them well. So But I'm going to try between this week and next week to apply it to eating. I'm encouraged by what Kylie. I grew up in a gobbling family. And even though I've been trying for years not to do that, it seems mealtime is always very rushed. So I'm going to add that in for this week. So thank you again, as always. Thank you.
No, thanks, Deborah. A lot in what you said. I like that. I also remember that I grew up in a family of relatively slow eaters. Interesting. My father was like all-time slow eater. Interesting. Not sure the reasons for that, but it was the truth. And but I love what you were saying, particularly about being in touch with the breath and the body, you know, several times a day. In the context of some discomfort, right? And having that be a practice that can be done even in those circumstances, let alone when there's not discomfort, right? And then connecting it with the heart practice, with the gratitude. That sounds very, very skillful. And, partly in terms of what you have in your life, but I think for anyone, something like that could be very, very helpful way of connecting with the body and mingling the awareness with the quality of kindness and gratitude is wonderful to have those together.
Yeah. Thank you. I also know there are lots of people with a lot more pain than I have, so I'm always grateful for that I can have a perspective.
Yeah. But it can be also something where there are limitations, finding a way to practice without just going into negativity, right? Maybe because there is always going to be an optimal way to respond to the situation, right? And you can do that with, and connecting with gratitude, even if it's some aspects are hard, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, thank you for that. So let's close now. Before we go to the meta cards, let's just take a moment and reflect each of us. How many of you would like to take one or two of these for the next week? You can raise your hand. Not necessary, but. And reflect on which of these one or two could be more, or maybe you have your own. What would you like to work with in the next week? Focus on, and what's going to help you to remember day by day? Just take a minute or two to reflect on that.